Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it's been a long few days here in the Washington, D.C. area, from Supreme Court decisions to beastly heat to loss of power due to storms we'll talk about a little bit later in our conversations. So it's been a long time since we've had some good martinis. And I don't know if this one's a stand-up-and-cheer martini, but it at least gives us a little bit of a pause from all the bad news we've been dealing with in the last few days. And that's the President Obama is clearly worried about his fundraising numbers. In his matchup with Mitt Romney, we know in the last couple of months, Romney has soundly outraised him ever since he became the de facto nominee. And apparently, in a call to a key group of fundraisers, Obama's really stressed about this thing. One of the fundraisers who was on the conference call taped it and leaked it to the Daily Beast. So now we know that the president is not just doing victory laps around the White House due to his convoluted victory at the Supreme Court, thanks to Chief Justice Roberts, but he's still worried about reelection because he thinks he might be on the losing end of the money race.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Greg. Last week began with the lovely and wonderful and smart Dana Perino observing that on Monday, Obama had gone to like six fundraisers. This was a day that the wildfires in Colorado were blazing out of control, people having to evacuate from their homes and watch their homes go up in flames. And she had said that Obama would have done himself a lot more good if he had just skipped the fundraisers or just cancel on the folks who'd attended and go out there and, you know, do the old Bill Clinton, I feel your pain, make sure the federal responses are up to speed, et cetera, et cetera. Just the optics would be so much better. So I, for one, am glad that Obama did go out on Friday to check out how the damage is and how the response is going. But he didn't waste much time because it was on the flight back that he made this conference call. And I think you're right. One of the things that's kind of there are two or three bizarre things going on in the campaign world right now. One is that you would have said that from about the beginning of, you know, May or June, Obama was having a really tough couple of news cycles. And actually, he's not doing that bad in the polls, considering obviously, you know, last week he got quite a bit of good news with Obamacare being upheld by the Supreme Court. But they're still behaving as if they're in real trouble. And you would figure that if anything, the Obama would not have a problem in terms of campaign fundraising. Sure, some of his numbers are behind 2008, but I'm kind of left baffled by this because I don't think there's ever been an incumbent president where you can say they lost the race because they were outspent. And in fact, I think the last time you could say any major campaign had a serious issue with funding, you might be able to argue that Bob Dole back in 1996. Did not have the funding after the primaries ended until the Republican convention at the end of the summer. So during that gap, the Bill Clinton campaign kind of went in and pummeled him with ads. That's not the circumstance this year. No incumbent president has a problem getting their message out. When you come to town, you have Air Force One. You know, everybody comes out to see the president. You get, you know, enormous pomp and circumstance. And then you can either do campaign events or you can do totally not a campaign event, which, as we all know, looks just like a campaign event. The only difference is that the president is supposed to look a little sheepish when they start chanting four more years at an official taxpayer-sponsored, totally not a campaign event. So the idea that Obama – I don't know whether this is a genuine need or just kind of a knee-jerk reflex on his part. The idea that he absolutely has to raise money, no matter what the time, no matter what the circumstances, on his bad days or on his good days. Clearly, money is kind of a security blanket to his campaign, and he wants more of it. Suggesting that they see something that has them nervous about, you know, November.
I guess so. Maybe he's asking his contributors to pay their fair share into the campaign, and that would be consistent with his usual themes. I think he's probably also a little bit squeamish about the fact that he's probably not going to meet that $1 billion total if the current fundraising numbers keep their pace. Even if he were to raise $100 million every month the rest of the way, I don't think he'd get there. So the man of the great expectations here is going to fall a little bit short in that category. But if he wins re-election, no one's going to remember that, unfortunately. So on to martini number two now. And Jim, one of the things that gave conservatives pause about Mitt Romney as the potential Republican nominee and now de facto Republican nominee is the fact that he had this thing in Massachusetts that eventually was called Romney Care, where he basically instituted an individual mandate, did a lot of things that are strikingly similar to what ended up in the president's health care plan, although Romney has repeatedly promised to repeal it and grant waivers and do whatever is necessary to make sure that it doesn't take effect. Well, of course, last week, the individual mandate was upheld, not by the usual methods, Commerce Clause, etc., but as a tax. The Obama White House campaign, Democrats across the board, despite John Roberts saying this is a tax, saying, no, this is a penalty, this is not really a tax. So what do you do when you're Eric Fernstrom on MSNBC's Morning Rundown with Chuck Todd when they ask you about your individual mandate back in Massachusetts? Chuck Todd asking, is this a penalty or is this a tax?
The governor does not believe the mandate is a tax. That's what you're saying.
The governor believes that what we put in place in Massachusetts was a penalty, and he disagrees with the court's ruling that the mandate was a tax. But again,
so he agrees with the president, but he agrees with the president that it is not, and he believes that you shouldn't call the tax penalty a tax. You should call it a penalty or a fee or a fine.
That's correct, but the president also needs to be held accountable for his hypocritical and contradictory statements.
And he went on to explain that a little bit more. But, Jim, here's the problem for Romney and Fernstrom. Fernstrom can't say that Romney was this big tax raiser if, in fact, this really was a tax in the mandate with the penalty. And, of course, he also wants to make sure that everybody knows that Romney doesn't like the Supreme Court decision. But in doing so, he plays right into Obama's hand in saying that even though the court said this was a tax, it's not really a tax.
You know, it's a frustrating set of circumstances, Greg. And what you're supposed to do is when Eric Fernstrom says something you don't want him to say, you just pick him up and shake him vigorously, and then he's blank again, like an Etch-a-Sketch used the last time he was in the news. And then what you would have him say, that I think would be a much better answer, is to say, well, Chuck, under the U.S. Constitution, we believe that nothing in the U.S. Constitution gives the federal government the authority to make you purchase something as a part of citizenship. We believe that the Commerce Clause does not give the federal government that power, and in fact, you know, the justices agreed with that. Romneycare, whether you like it or do not like it, was completely authorized under the state constitution of Massachusetts. State governments are authorized to do things that federal government is not, and whether or not you like Romneycare, you can't argue that it is unconstitutional. Mitt Romney and many other conservatives believe that even after this decision, that Obamacare is fundamentally unconstitutional because it expands the power of the government, originally through the Commerce Clause, now under the power of taxation to do whatever the heck it wants. That's what I would have said. And I would have emphasized, you know, like as much as you don't like Romneycare, and I don't think many conservatives are fighting against the federal individual mandate to get the federal government to stop making us buy health insurance just so that the states can make us buy health insurance. I think it's a bad idea for governments to make us buy something as a price of citizenship. Having said that, if you got to defend Romneycare, you got to emphasize the difference between the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, and argue this is an example of federalism, that what works in Massachusetts may not work everywhere else. Just a swing and a miss for Eric Fernstrom there. I'm sure you know he had some good days and some bad days. After the Etch-a-Sketch remark, he was the one who pointed out that the picture of Barack Obama sitting with his dog Beau was, in hindsight, a chilling photo, considering the president's former culinary selection. So some days you're just going to have a bad day, and I think it was just a bad day for Eric Fernstrom having to split that hair and hope that nobody noticed.
And let's hope that Mitt Romney's better at parsing what he did and what the difference is and between his plan and the president's, and his defense of the plan is going to complicate this, I fear, down the line. So we'll see how well he can articulate the differences here, especially what their plans would be going forward. Jim, last topic. I know a lot of folks have been following this, I'm sure, over the weekend to some extent, especially if they live in the D.C. area or have family or friends in this area. And that is the freak storm on Friday night, right in the middle of this brutal heat wave. We were hit with apparently what's called a derecho, a whole type of storm that we'd never heard of before. It's a land hurricane. Why they don't just call it a land hurricane, I'm not sure. But anyway, it sounds cooler if it's in Spanish. That knocked out power to, I guess, 3 to 4 million people, many of them still without power. Some of the companies saying they won't be on until the end of this week, which is just awful if you don't have air conditioning in these 90 or 100 plus degree temperatures. So I know from our brief chat before we started here that you and I turned out okay, but a whole new lesson on what a land hurricane or a derecho is, and we get to see how the different governments respond to this with the governor of Maryland berating the utility companies and the governor of Virginia kind of partnering with them as they try to get stuff back in order.
Yeah, it's a mess. Listeners outside the Beltway area might be surprised how often the National Capital Region ends up having some serious problem with power. It seems like it very often is either, you know, winter storms and you know, the weight of the snow and ice bringing down tree limbs, or wind in summer thunderstorms. Worth noting about the derecho you mentioned, that Pat Buchanan is actually now denouncing it for coming across the border and taking away jobs from American storms. You know, because look, if they're unemployed American storms sitting around on there, you know, in this economy, the last thing we need is cheap foreign storms coming over and doing a more powerful job than our own ones. You know, my sympathies to anybody who has to go without power these last couple of days. It has come at a terrible time regarding the awful heat wave. Think of how great your carbon footprint is right now, you know, and how much lower your energy usage is. Also, I don't know if you're planning on commuting today, Greg, but please be very careful. My understanding is that the Beltway is just littered with volts stuck where they are because no one can plug in. You know, those of us with our gas guzzlers are cruising past them going, ha ha. So look, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, gallows humor during a miserable heat wave and massive power outages, we would have no humor at all. So I hope everyone gets through it okay, avoids heat stroke, drink lots of fluids, and, you know, hopefully sometime in the not-too-distant future we'll get a local governments and that can, you know, empower companies that can handle high winds and stuff like that, and maybe not put all of our power lines right next to big trees.
And a little bit of a lesson to us. We were kind of grousing on Friday about what a horrible week it was politically, and it was, and we were kind of thinking about, wow, this has really been a horrible week. How could it get any worse? Well, we found out on Friday. Jim, glad your AC is running well. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.